Okay, and welcome to the Refinery episode number 5, I guess it is, on July 15th, 2014. I am Leslie Price, and we've got JD, Fishy, and Corey and Andy with us today, and a couple more people are going to be stopping by later. If you'd like to join us live on chat, you can check us out at the website conservativeunion.net/refinery. On that page, you can watch the video and chat live with us if you would like to interact via text while we're talking and tell us what to talk about. Other than that, how's everybody doing on a Tuesday evening?
Good.
Hot. Really, really hot.
You are so
Uncomfortable.
hot, JD. You're so hot.
No, not hot like, hot like Paris Hilton hot. Like hot. Really, really uncomfortably hot. It's nasty here. It's raining and it's not cooled off at all. It's just
I'm just
humid and
disturbed.
hot.
I'm disturbed that he defaulted to Paris Hilton.
Yeah, I
Well, that
know.
was your catchphrase, was that's hot. It wasn't hot like she's attractive hot. It was hot the
Okay,
catchphrase.
but nobody over a certain age got that reference that way. I'm just saying. Everybody thinks you think Paris Hilton's hot now.
And you've been
I do
referring
not.
to her on every issue.
I know.
Immigration,
Yeah.
I
Well,
mean,
I mean, I think she's one of the
taxes.
great minds of my generation, so.
The tanning tax, she didn't support that. She thought
We
that.
shouldn't let these people in. They don't all look like Paris Hilton. JD, that really doesn't apply here.
You're really saying things that are making me think about my values and what I believe, Andy. So this is the kind of hard-hitting discussion that we need and encourage here at the refinery.
Well,
We we
you did want to talk about effective messaging, right? So
absolutely effective message.
we're That's okay,
reaching out.
JD. Get it out. Get it out. Get it all out.
I
This
appreciate it.
is very good.
I feel like I really made a breakthrough here.
It's the high class intellectualism that we really start out our meetings with that really just astounds me. We always start out with such really intellect. We are the intellectual giants of the conservative movement, aren't we? That's so hot.
We start out at the bottom and plummet from there.
There, yes, we do. Oh my gosh. The first thing I want to mention is something that was just released a few moments ago, and Felicia had me watch it, and it is the new video from the Party of Choice. And it is, I freaking love fracking. I'm going to put the link in the chat window so that other people can watch it. Because we can't, if we watch it here on this video, then when people watch it on YouTube, it's just this, 30 seconds of dead space. So people should watch it on their own. We'll put links to it in our YouTube afterwards. But it's awesome. Did you know that oil field workers are hot?
Like
See?
uncomfortable, sweaty hot.
No. Like that's so hot, like Paris Hilton hot.
Okay.
That's so
All right.
hot.
Thank you. As long as we've made
In a
that clear.
way, I mean, in a way, because they're sweaty and it's uncomfortable for me how hot they look. So,
Sweaty.
in a
I see
way, I
what you
mean,
did
but
there.
it's a really a roundabout reference, yeah.
Okay then.
We're already on just this is just the course for the show is just
I
way
told you
off
it's gonna
already.
plummet. Okay, I told you plummeting.
I'm expecting the short sudden stop.
It's not the
Any
fall that
second.
kills you.
Any second now.
Yeah. But I really love that video. It's fun and it's catchy and it doesn't go into the, all of the boring, stupid stuff. It's lighthearted. It's bunnies. It's America.
Thank you.
How did you guys get the idea for it?
Well, go ahead.
Honestly, we were just goofing around in the car one day and we were saying that we loved fracking, and then I said, I freaking love fracking. It kind of went downhill from there.
I just suddenly, it just kind of honestly, virtually the entire ad happened in my head in the next few seconds. I
And you
was
know
inspired.
what? I think that's where some of the best advertising and memes comes from. It's just automatically, it's just in your head, and then somehow you manage to make it real.
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, I mean, I really love all the fracking ads that are out there. I just wanted something that, you know, was a little more annoying to the left.
Yes.
I just wanted something that wasn't almost apologetic for being pro-fracking. I wanted it to be annoying.
And exactly. the great part is that it's earwormery. And so people will get it stuck in their heads, which is beautiful because that will tick off the left even more.
Yay.
Exactly. Like what was the commercial that ran on Fox like every minute of every hour about the sticker that you put across your head for your headaches? That they repeated the same slogan 50 times during the ad?
The roll-on? I don't know about the sticker. I remember the roll-on.
Yeah, it was the roll-on. It wasn't a sticker. It was the roll-on, whatever that one was.
But I can't remember what it was.
Hold on. It was like I know the one that you're talking about.
I just had an image of like Breathe Right breath strips only for headaches where it pulls your skull off a little bit. You know, it really takes the pressure off. Oh my gosh, that's so much better.
That is a marketable idea. I think you should run with it.
You can run with this. Unfortunately, somebody's going to see this and they're just going to run with it. We're not going to
make it. It's stolen. By now, it's all right. I mean,
it's already there. It's out there.
I will say, I mean, we are growing our viewer base. It's increased pretty well over the past couple of weeks, and I'm impressed. I'm happy. The clips have been doing really well for the refinery. And it's just been it's been really cool to see all, you know, a lot of people sharing and commenting and viewing the videos. We had a ton of them this week.
I love how you assembled those. I mean, seriously, they're sharp.
I only do some of the work. I clip them and take them out, but people tell me what needs to get clipped. So I'm super glad that we've been able to do that and that those have been doing pretty well.
And rolling them out consistently every other day or so is...
Every day.
Every day?
We've done it for 2 weeks.
Okay, so I'm not paying attention, apparently. Oops.
No. We've been doing it for 2 weeks, and just the way that it happened was the first week we happened to end up with 5 clips. The second week we happened to end up with 5 clips. So Tuesday, then we have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday with clips. No clip on Monday, and then we have the show on Tuesday. So it's been pretty regular content.
That's absolutely the perfect way to do it. I mean, to get consistently, it's just always there's something out there and there's something new. And I think the key is putting the clickbait headlines on them. Impeachment? ? And people will watch that. Because, you know, they want impeachment, no! Okay, they're going to watch that because they have rhinos, whatever.
Yeah, we put some, I will totally admit to doing that with some of the pictures that are on the covers of the things, like with Ronald Reagan and Harry Reid and all those things. They have stuff to do with the actual content of the clips, so they're not entirely misrepresenting it, but... it's there. Hopefully you'll click the content. And hopefully you'll like it. So.
Well, they do, and it makes sense. It's the you want the image and the title of the clip as well as the text that we used in the intros when we share it to tie in and give people a reason to watch the 4 or 5 minute clip, and they always do. But it also needs to be clickbaity enough to shock and surprise. One weird thing and.
Yes, 7 weird tricks to get people to watch your internet conversation about conservative messaging.
Right?
Exactly. What we're going to do is we're going to clip this segment out right now, and then we're going to put it out there. So it's like a super meta clip of a clip talking about clips. It's next level stuff. Speaking of shares, though, if I may, now that you know, we did the sort of. I took care of the patting ourselves back on the back part of the show. I would like to further the patting ourselves on the back part of the show by saying, "Holy cow!" Something really, really big happened on the Free Radical Network, and I need to tell people about it. Our friend Stefan, who is at Crayon Pundit with a K on Twitter, had a piece go up on Monday, and it's right now 15 likes away from 300 likes.
Wow.
Wow.
Which that is insane. Great. It was on welfare, and it was, you know, it's I'm so happy.
And that's a great piece, because it's about why are we such haters of welfare users.
Yeah, it's you know, it wasn't. I don't think it was meant to be a scolding piece to you know, yell at people not to be angry about the situation with welfare, but. The impetus behind the article was there was a picture that I saw shared by some you know, group that somebody shared it. I saw a picture on Facebook that I put
Young Conservatives.
Young Conservatives, there we go. Young Conservatives had a picture up that got 3,000 likes or something or shares, that's what it was. 3,000 shares. And it kind of annoyed me because what the picture of our picture was of was a truck with a bumper sticker that said, "I'm a Republican because not everybody can be on welfare."
Yeah.
And I reacted poorly to that. I was not very happy about it. And I kind of threw it into one of our Facebook groups and said, "Look at this junk, this crap." And I was just very, very upset about it. But Stefan came in with some very pointed commentary on it, and that eventually turned into the article, you know, putting us into the shoes of a, you know, someone who is actually on welfare, and what goes through a person's head when they see this kind of negative messaging. You know, like the point of the article is we shouldn't be giving ammunition to our enemies, because Already, the Democrats have a hold on welfare recipients and people in these communities, and we're just making them feel worse. We're making them, you know, we're giving them another excuse to hate Republicans. So, with this kind of messaging, so the response has been huge. So many people have commented and shared, saying that. It's helped them to you know, look at the situation from another angle, and you know, we need to get to those communities, and we need to give the message of conservatism in a positive way and come up with some actual solutions to the problem of welfare, instead of just saying, no, you know, you're on welfare, bad welfare. So
well, and I think, too, that some of the conversation is centering around the idea that people in the conservative movement, people that end of the spectrum, really do feel as though they've been taken advantage of in, you know, by the whole welfare system, by welfare users. We hear and we have heard for decades about the people who don't want to get off welfare, who are gaming the system, who are making complex economic choices that benefit themselves based on tax dollars that they're receiving. And it is so easy for conservatives to take that perspective and say, we're being abused, we're being taken advantage of, we're being exploited by a bunch of people who don't do, they don't contribute, they don't add anything to society or whatever. That's the tack they're taking, and they feel abused by the whole process. My argument in talking to people is, isn't it really more evidence that the government is victimizing all of us? That they are creating systems that make it such that a person who wants to get a job takes a deep pay cut and benefit cut by going off welfare to do so, until they have many, many more skills acquired or experience acquired? And aren't we being exploited in the same way by having our tax dollars go to generate this Democrat, I guess, vote machine, as it would be termed, we're all being taken advantage. The real enemy here is the federal government. And wouldn't it be lovely if we joined forces together and were able to explain to people from the conservative perspective that they're being exploited for the power of a few people in Washington who like to control people. They do it to us by taking our tax dollars. They do it to welfare recipients by mandating what they can and can't do, putting limitations on them, reducing their benefits if they attempt to get ahead. We're all being victimized here. Well, and I think when people hear that message, they start to think a little differently about it.
I love where you're going with it, because how idiotic of us to use a bumper sticker or something like that to draw attention away from how the left is exploiting them and draw attention to how we are mocking them? I mean, what, did the left, like, send this person money to put that on their truck? I mean, wait a minute, maybe they did. I don't really know, but how ridiculous of us to actually help the other side to that degree.
And some of the arguments I'm getting back are that, you know, the write-off argument, the 47% argument. These are people who are never going to be with us. And I can understand that assumption, perhaps, but what you're also seeing right now, especially around the issue of immigration in certain inner city communities, particularly there's video coming out from Rebel Pundit from Chicago, where black communities, people are speaking up in opposition very loudly to what's going on. Now, whether that translates to a broader understanding of the issues of, you know, government is picking winners and losers, I don't know, but it's a start. There's movement. There's effort by FreedomWorks in the Chicago community to talk to people, and in Detroit, and to talk to people about the kinds of issues that affect them in communities that conservatives don't normally go to. It's a great shift, and I don't know that people understand exactly what, say, I'm saying when I argue. I'm not telling anybody you shouldn't be allowed to have that bumper on your car, that bumper sticker on your car. That is your choice. You absolutely can do that. I'm all about the choices that you make. I want you, though, not to do it without thinking about what you're doing. And if I'm scolding, it seemed to be scolding someone from that, I'm not. I'm just asking you to think through all the parts that could come from that. Because it's not just the people on welfare seeing that could get disturbed and negatively react to that. We're not just talking with that bumper sticker to the people who happen to be on welfare. The people who aren't, but who have compassionate hearts, can look at that and be offended by that as well. And they're also a constituency we can lose.
Well, if the person driving that car speaks for all Republicans, I don't want to be associated with that. I don't want to be associated with that guy, because I don't feel that way. And what a lot of people, to go back to what you were saying about the fear and the anger, and we do see and know that the welfare system and the disability system are being used and abused and being taken advantage of, and we want that to stop, absolutely. No disagreement there whatsoever, but that's not going to be stopped by expressing hatred at the people who rightfully take the money that is offered. You know, if somebody's offering me $20, I'm going to take the $20. Whether it's $20 from the government for a program that I don't technically qualify for, they're offering me the money. Why would I turn it down? And there are an awful lot of people that are on welfare and disability and all of these programs because they marginally qualify, and it's the rational economic decision for them at that point in their lives. And I cannot criticize that, because they are making the best free market financial economic decision for their lives. And I don't hate them for that. I appreciate them for having that logic and making that decision. I want to change the system such that the system rewards them for actually being a net producer of goods and services in society. And in order to be able to make that change to the structure of our programs, we need to get more people voting for free market, liberty, Republican, conservative causes. And in order to make that happen, we have to take a step back and make ourselves a more popular group that people want to be part of. And these days, in 2014, the way you are popular group is if you are kind, loving, and compassionate, because that is a value that is held very strongly by society. And so if we want to be more popular, we have to be seen as being more compassionate and giving. The cool thing is, we actually, according to all of the statistics, we actually are more kind, compassionate, caring, and giving. We just aren't perceived that way because we have this stupid bumper sticker kind of mentality. So all I really want to do is align our messaging with what our hearts really are and with what our actions really are. For some reason, when you then tell people, guys, your messaging isn't in line with your actual feeling, they get really weird about it. I've had a lot of pushback on sharing that article by people disagreeing with me that driving around with that bumper sticker isn't the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, it's a weird phenomena. And we saw it similarly with the we talked about this, I don't know, maybe it was the first episode, I'm not quite sure, but the Obama urinal cake situation mm-hmm. that we talked about.
Right.
There's some perception that, oh, this is actually hurting them somehow. This is actually hurting the left, the institutional left, not the people who, you know, vote for, you know, benefits because that's what they survive on. You know, it's infuriating and strange that that there is this perception or this belief that somehow this is going to help. It's going to, you know, increase our position. We're going to be better off because we're, you know, being jerks to, you know, Obama, or in this case, people who aren't even, you know, elected officials who are, you know, they aren't doing anything to hurt us. They aren't the guys who are, you know, making these ridiculous and constraining and terrible laws when it comes to welfare. They aren't the ones who are making that legislation happen. In fact, if they had the chance to craft legislation, I would think that it would be a little bit different from what it is right now. If they had a chance to reform welfare in a way that they felt was actually beneficial to them, I think that there would be a lot of changes to the welfare system. So it's a strange thing, and you're right. It exists out there, Leslie, that there is this.
It's this drive for catharsis, and it's like the obsession with, it's cathartic, and so I'm going to do it, and I'm going to put my, you know, draw the line in the sand, and this is what I'm going to do, and this is how I'm going to act. I am not going to express any kindness or empathy because I don't think welfare is a good thing, and if I am kind to someone, if I act kind towards welfare, that'll mean I'm a lefty. And it's like, stop and think about what you're doing. It's okay to have that bumper sticker, but think about, before you put that bumper sticker on and before you share this story or comment in such a way, what is your goal in doing so? Is it just to express your feelings? Then knock yourself out. But do not be delusional and think that you are actually helping the movement, because you're not.
And I think that there are two things that really need to be brought up here. Is that first off, this article, Wealth Failure, does not in any way, shape, or form promote or back welfare. It's not.
Yeah, it not is, at all.
It's not a proponent. We're not in it to increase the welfare state in any way, shape, or form here. And that's not what's going on. And also, there's nowhere in the article that says that you're a moron for having this bumper sticker. I said that initially when I posted it. I was very angry about the bumper sticker, but after examining it, that's not the proper approach. It's not, you know, you don't go out there and call people jerks or morons for having these bumper stickers. It's just, it isn't. All the article does is it says, hey, think about it. That's all it is. It just
yeah,
says,
slow down and think.
Just consider what message you're sending and whether it actually does anything good. If it's worth the half chuckle that, you know, one of your buddies is going to give whenever they see it. I personally do not think that that there's any value added for this bumper sticker.
I think it ties in. I'm sorry. Let me just really jump in real quick, Andy. I think it ties in too the same way that we're seeing now the Justice Department going after the guy with the Obama outhouse presidential library. That is obscene to me that the government is going after this guy. Mm-hmm. And we should defend that guy's right to be a jerk. Sorry. To express himself in a way that is unhelpful.
Good but catch.
Really, that we should be out there defending him, and that is what a great article today that we posted from Fingers Malloy said, and it was in the Washington Times, and Fingers made the point, you know, here's the Justice Department that can't move on anything, but they are dang sure going to check this guy out. It's abhorrent what the government's doing, and we ought to be doing things to stand up for the idea that that guy should be able to do what he wants. And then we could come to the side and say, however, we don't think it was wise, but my God, he's certainly got the right not to be harassed by the government.
Right. I don't like that instance. Ad or, you know, whatever the message is. I'm not even sure what it is, but, you know, it's kind of a stupid float, but it's just a stupid float.
But he could be a racist, so, you know.
Well, he's criticizing Obama, therefore he is racist. Isn't that...
I don't know, I'm not supportive. Again, it was a stupid float, but yeah. You know, if that's really what the Justice Department is investigating, oh my God, this guy might be a racist. There are lots of racist people out there. I'm sorry, they still exist. There are
and
still
what does
racists
that have to
there.
Do?
And last time I checked, it's a crime in certain situations like employment and that stuff, but if this is just some racist jerk being a racist jerk, and not assaulting anyone and not, you know, there is a pretty broad First Amendment protection there. So,
in what way does that
sorry,
guys, interfere
I
with anyone else's
to,
rights?
Maybe
they
just didn't have anything else better to do.
Because all the problems have been solved. Obviously. Yeah. And kind of connected to that, did you guys see the recent video or the video today, the updated video of the Peggy Johnson, the one who at the Obama rally in 2008, we've all seen and heard the clip of her being so excited about Barack Obama and that he's going to be the president and she's not going to have to worry about her mortgage and she's not going to worry about putting gas in her tank and how if she takes care of him, he's going to take care of her. We all saw that video of Peggy Johnson. Well, now 6 years later, there's a follow-up to that, and turns out that Peggy is now on video saying, "Oh, you know what? I was wrong," and she actually had the courage to say she was wrong, and to say that she was inspired and motivated and eager and hopeful and optimistic, and she was wrong and she made a mistake, and it hasn't turned out that way. And guess what? All of our preconceived notions and assumptions about Peggy were wrong. She's a mother of four, works as a nurse, and has never been on government assistance for a minute in her life. And I think we all assumed that the woman on the video in 2008 was some, you know, crazy welfare queen, greedy. I think I had assumed that.
Ready to get her Obama money.
Right. And that was, you know, the Obama money person was a different person, but we assumed they're all the same, that they're all welfare queens and we've made fun of them, and we were wrong. I was wrong in my assumptions about Peggy. And in the video that I shared out earlier that's part of an upcoming documentary, she had the courage to say, yeah, I made a mistake. And she was able to do that on camera because the guy who was filming it didn't come at her pointing his finger at her and saying, you were wrong. He just asked, I'm here to do a follow-up interview. You were so motivated and inspired. What has turned up? What has happened since? And he openly accepted and supported the fact that it was great that she was inspired and motivated and hopeful and believing in change. And it's an illustration of the stuff that Andy has been talking about. It was awesome.
The stuff? Which stuff?
Where in order, you have to kind of let them save face. If they're going to, before they can admit that they made a mistake, you have to, you know, step to their side. And I support what you said, and I agree with you. I understand why you were so inspired and motivated and hopeful for everything that Obama was talking about, because you really, you know, it seemed like such a great thing. And giving them then the space and the permission to say, you know, it really didn't turn out that way, without it having to be you win, I lose.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of that. You know, I mean, I'll tell people, you know, hey, I love the reason you want, you know, higher taxes on the rich. You see poorer people who are struggling and in need, and you want to see them get the money. You know, I disagree with how you want to get it to them, but I love your reason for wanting to do that. And then they lower their wall a little bit, and you can tell them, now look, the difference is Democrats give them the money in a way that makes them need Democrats. Republicans give them the money in a way that makes them need themselves. And that's what we want to do. We think that's the caring thing. You know, I think one of the big problems with, you know, and kind of like that bumper sticker, one of the big problems with our side is this. Our side does not take enough time to contemplate why are people on welfare? Not just the fact that they fell into a hard situation and now they need it for a time, but why do they stay on it? And I think we need to, and if we can simply relate to them and say, look, I understand it. I understand you lose a job. You're terrified. You're at home. You've already gone through the horrible rejection, okay? You were useful. You were needed. People needed you to show up to work every day. They relied on you. And now that place is going on. You're not there. It's going on without you, and you don't feel needed. And then you're going into other places fresh and being churned down, and it hurts. And it's painful. And you sit at home afraid, alone. You know, look, we understand that. But we feel that if you could have whatever you wanted, what you would want is a job where you could be useful again, not a check where you could subsist. We want what you want, not what you settle for. You know, and I think we need to show people that. And bumper stickers like that convey the exact opposite. They convey your cattle who are just taking what you can get from us. And then we actually act surprised when they never vote for us again. I'm sorry to ramble on, but it just sickens me.
No. And it's like, it's sort of the fight, and I hate to bring it up, but it's something that I do think is relevant. But a discussion I've had a bunch of times with a bunch of different people is the difference between John Galt and Henry Reardon in Atlas Shrugged. And I hate to be the guy to bring that up because it's so stereotypical that it would be me. But, you know, John Galt was kind of a jerk. The guy inspired other people to leave society when they really, really, at a time when they really, really could have used those people, those geniuses, those brilliant people to continue to build and to, you know, go on and work and help and try and go and create some real change. And to fight. But instead, he's like, ah, no, screw it. These guys are all jerks, so I'm just going to put up this bumper sticker and say, screw you to the world, and, you know, be on my way. Versus the Reardons who stayed and fought. So, you know, you're taking yourself away from the battle, I think, when you put those kind of bumper stickers up. And when you do say, hey, you know what, 47%, we're not going to get them ever, so let's just, you know, not only should we not care about them, but we should just say mean and awful things about them because they're too stupid to realize that they're on welfare and they're on the government dole and all of that stuff. No, it's terrible.
Couldn't we basically ask our fellow conservatives one simple question? The left wants to get more votes than you, so what would they hope you put on your bumper? Is that a fair question to ask?
Ooh, I like
But they're going to get these votes anyway. But they're going. But this isn't taking away anyone's vote.
Oh, come on now. But yes, it is because, as was said earlier, what are you doing with all the people who are not on welfare but care about them or know somebody on welfare? The audience is wider than those you are talking about on your bumper sticker. Once again, what does the left hope you will do? What do they want on your bumper sticker? And I really think people need to think about that just as much as they got to think about actually relating to these people, not just saying they're on welfare taking my money, but why are they staying there? Why are they afraid of the workplace? Why are they afraid of this world out there? Why are they afraid? Well, let me tell you why they're afraid, because they might fail. And if they didn't have this safety net, they've got three kids who might not eat. How's that for fear? And also, by the way, maybe it's a husband who's, you know, we men are like this. We feel we are useless if we're not making money. You know, I mean, that's just the way we get, which is ridiculous, but we do that. And they're just like, how are they going to feel? They're going to feel terrified if they have to tell their wife and kids, no, that interview didn't go that well. I didn't get that. You know, we don't relate to anybody, and we don't think about who we're advertising for with our bumpers.
And it's bizarre to me that is the case, because what are we always talking about? How conservatives are already compassionate, that compassionate conservatism is like this junk word, this junk phrase that doesn't mean anything, because it's the definition of conservatism is trying to help people help themselves, having compassion for their situation, but not the kind of compassion that just leaves them there, but that wants to bring them out of it and better themselves. And so we contribute so much to charities, and we spend a lot of time volunteering, and we don't talk about it much. Even Romney was very, very quiet when he ran about the good works that he had done. And then in this area, we're completely giving the different message, a completely separate message, that some people are beyond our compassion, that some people are beyond our attempts to reach out to them, and that therefore they are somehow less important, period. Electorally, you know, societally, whatever. That resonates with a whole bunch of people in the middle to say, oh, of course Republicans are just about the rich. Of course Republicans are just about old white guys and married families and whatever, and suburban moms and all that. We have got to pay better attention to that. I don't want to see the compassion that I know conservatives have frittered away in an instant with this kind of messaging that says the exact opposite.
And it's true. One message that's not the worst bumper sticker I've seen, and it's not the worst comment I've seen. We're using it as an example, and it's really not even the worst ever. But stuff like that, one oh crap kind of message like that can wipe out all of the good work that's been done in the previous week. You know, no matter how hard we work at putting out a message of caring and compassion and help people to get off of welfare and back into the workforce, and messaging in a way that is kind and supportive, and genuine and honest and still true to our goals and our beliefs and our philosophies, then there's one guy who posts some jerk meme that gets, you know, 400 plus ones and reshared everywhere and a bunch of woohoo comments. And there's been so much of that lately, it just makes me want to slash my wrists, as you guys know from a message I posted yesterday.
it is kind of a strange thing, but as we mentioned before, apparently there's some catharsis that people get from sort of collectively raging against the situation and being upset and annoyed and getting that off of their chests. But there's a difference between doing that privately maybe and doing that publicly and, in a way that isn't super productive and in fact does have an adverse effect on a lot of people and not just the people who are on welfare, which is the big overarching point that we really, really, really need to make here, is that it's not just the groups, and this same exact thing goes for, gay rights issues and all of it, basically the whole, everything we talked about a few episodes back about the Texas Republican Party platform, and who's going to read that? How's that going to affect anyone? It's not going to do anything except for the fact that it poisons a lot of people. It's not just the people that it's not just gay people that it affects. It affects people who are friends with gays. It affects people, who are related, have any kind of, relationship at all, or just, not a big fan of people being jerks. That's one of those things. It's tough that we keep on managing to not realize the breadth of people that are going to be taken away from our sphere of influence by these messages.
Well, yeah, and you also have to keep in mind, we always have to realize that we are on the side that is against, that our opposition has the big three, media, academia, and entertainment industry. So whenever we do have any bad message, it's going to be out there everywhere. And at the DNC, when they're celebrating Obama's candidacy and they can, in 2012, his reelection campaign, and they can have, literally they're wearing buttons that say, once you vote black, you never go back, which is a hideous racist comment. Well, that's not going to get out. Why? The big three are on their side. We have to understand they're not on our side, and we can't make mistakes like that in a vacuum. We don't have that. We got to quit acting like we do, and I look at, I look at these people who once again, who are on welfare, the people who that bumper sticker is referring to, right? I mean, we've talked about how obviously that's going to drive people to the DNC, of course. But, I thought Tay put a really good comment up here. The system is rigged to keep people stuck in it is the big problem. Okay, now think about that. Okay, so, well, how can we possibly reach people who are on welfare? I'll tell you how. You talk to them and say, okay, is this, the life you're in, it's getting you by, and it's providing that life rope that you need at a hard time. I appreciate that. We all want that. Good for you. Like Leslie said, good for you. I would take it too. But I want to ask you this. What do you dream about being? Okay. How high, what do you dream about becoming for you and for your family? Okay, now ask yourself one last question. Staying in this situation, which party does that benefit if you stay in this situation instead? Obviously, it's the Democrats, so doesn't it make sense they want you to stay in this situation? Doesn't it make sense that they have put this together so that you will be stuck in it, that they've rigged the game, like Tay says? Who really cares about you? The one who wants you to fly higher or the one who wants you needing them? I'm done.
Well, and this brings up something that I've wanted to think about. We've talked about this quite a bit ago in a prior episode, I think before it was even Refinery. But we've talked about the way that the left characterizes constituencies. They the welfare people that they talk about, immigrants, they always have a constituency that they're the heroes for. They cast themselves as the heroes and they find pet victims or as Thomas Sowell calls them, mascots. And whatever group it is, whether it's Native Americans or whether it's an ethnic group, whatever it is, they cast themselves as the heroes, they cast us as the villains, and these people are the ones that they are going to save. This is a broad strategy they've used for decades. And I thought about the way that conservatism works and the kind of things that we're seeing in the welfare instance, for example, big government being the ones, and big government supporters and people, being the ones that are creating this situation that penalizes them for trying to get ahead, that takes our tax dollars with which to do it. They're being exploited at the government's hands at our expense. And so one way that we can think about talking about these things, and I, again, we've talked about it before, but I'd like to revisit it, is using that victim card that the left uses and stealing it from them and using it in the proper way. Because what better entity for us all to unite around opposing than big government being a bully and trying to control and direct everything we do? That works for welfare. We've demonstrated that. But what about immigration? When we're looking at the immigration issue, what is upsetting people the most is that, say, some of these people that have been flown across the country from this recent immigration wave have been flown without having to have ID or, you know, the basic security measures that we have to at the airport. It's unfair. It's fundamentally a difference in the application of the rule of law, that laws mean certain things for American citizens, but not for people who have jumped the line and come here illegally. That resonates with people, and it's not an ugly argument. And at the same time, the people who have come here legally and who have worked, and Paul Rodriguez said this, you know, with a comedian actor, that what do you say to all the people coming from, you know, behind the first, say, 6,000 that you let in and let stay here? What do you say to the 60,000 that come next? What do you say to the people who got here and did it the right way and went through the system, and that all these other people jumped the line? How is that fair? Again, it's the fairness issue. Conservatives always say to the words, you're not, you know, it's not fair. Life's not fair, but your government ought to be. And looking at issues like that in terms of fairness, I think takes it out of the emotional realm that we don't want it in, the negative emotional realm, and starts to push it in a positive emotional realm. I'd love everybody's thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, how would people feel about two parents who put their kids through hell and make it and make them jump through all kinds of hoops just to get dinner and treat all the kids in the neighborhood like royalty and hand out food to them and give them everything they want and buy clothes for them and go around the neighborhood and buy them the best shoes, buy them the best clothes, buy them bikes, buy them this, buy them that, and give them all kinds of stuff while the kids are in their own home they treat with disdain? That is what America is doing right now between citizens and non-citizens. It's ridiculous.
So the theories or the philosophy that the left is using, where they cast themselves, there's a hero, which is the left, and they are fighting on behalf of the downtrodden victim, and that downtrodden victim is the woman or the victim of bullying, you know, the child or, you know, whatever it is. So I think that's an effect. We know that's an effective structure. So we kind of have to, I agree with you that, you know, so-and-so, but the victim is not just this small isolated group. The victim is, and redefine, you're saying recast who the victim is, and then cast ourselves, the small government right, as the heroes instead, protecting a different victim class, right?
I think so, and I think you can do it one by one, or you could do it in groups. When we're talking about big government, there's any number of examples where big government is picked on one person or one industry. I can think of, you know, certain restaurants, or you know, JD could talk all day about the way that food has been handled, farmers and raw milk and things like that. There are a number of people making choices for themselves. What was it recently in Detroit about a goat farm where they tried to confiscate all the goats or something like that? And the victims become people who are trying to do for themselves and the government gets in their way. Or people who are making their own decisions and the government doesn't approve of that, and so they slap regulation on it. Or the people who are starting a small business that gets around a particular large business, let's say Uber and Lyft versus taxis, and the government keeps trying to hammer and out of existence those innovative companies because it's competition for the crony taxi industry, that sort of thing.
Well, those are pretty easy because those are obvious, you know, government victimizing people who want to do for themselves. I think, and by the way, absolutely go after that. I think in cases where the left has already successfully cast heroes and victims, and we want to recast who are the heroes and who are the victims, you cannot do that first unless you first show empathy for those that the left has cast as victims. You have to first say of these immigrants, look, I don't support illegality of any kind, but I certainly can't blame them for wanting to come to America. It's a great country. I'm proud of this country. They're right to want to come here. Good for them. And man, I want systems that we can, you know, where they can come here more easily, but it's got to be legal. And then you go into, you know, recasting who the heroes and victims are. But if we just recast it without first showing empathy for their victims, then they'll be able to simply dig in.
Precisely so. And when you're talking about, say, this particular issue with immigration, you definitely have the victims of the people who have come, you know, lured by government promises, whether overt or unspoken, of citizenship, rapid citizenship and processing and whatever. But you've also got people that are already here being victimized, people who are in the system attempting to become legalized who are going to be victimized by this as well. Never mind, too, all of the other people that are involved. I mean, there are plenty of places to look for people. And if we're focusing on what would it be like to be in so-and-so's shoes, before we start talking, you're absolutely right. We have a better chance of getting in and putting those things together. I just wish that we would explore talking like that more often when we make a case, instead of standing up and talking about those concepts and the big words that we frequently get caught up in. I keep saying over and over in every encounter I have about this, we can't wave our constitution, pocket constitutions in the air and yell constitution, constitution, and have it fix things. It's lovely that we know the principles behind them. How are we going to win so that those principles prevail? And I think you're right. Step one is put yourself in the shoes of the person that you're trying to convert.
Yeah, well, we always, you know, I mean, this is a party of choice thing, sorry. But we always say, you know, after you first show empathy for their, you know what I mean, first show them why you like their position. Take down the wall. You know, I love the reason you're pro-choice. I love the reason you want to help the poor. I love the reason whatever. I love the fact that you want to come to this country. You know, I you know, my gosh. And I even go further. I say, I think of the country you've been in. I think of where you come from. Of course you'd want to come here. My gosh. And I even want you to come here, as many as we can in the right way. But then we always say this. But keep in mind, we don't just support every choice. We support every individual choice that doesn't take away someone else's choice. And now this, by the way, the next sentence then gets into the victims this creates. Okay, look at all the system. Look at all the hospitals that are overwhelmed. Look at all the schools that are overwhelmed. Look at the literally trillions of dollars that have to be spent to support this. Look what it does to the choices of others. You see, and also look at how it dishonors the choice of those who came here legally. All right? So what we want to do is we want to help you come here legally the right way, but no country can take in people without limits. If we do, it will overwhelm the choices of those who do it the right way. Does that make sense? And then you show how they're victimized, how all these people are being victimized by this situation.
Yeah, I think it makes perfect sense, and I think it's, you know, and it gets back to the whole discussion that we had before. There's a lot of animosity that a lot of us on the right have been throwing, and it's not just been us on the right. It's been some pretty general animosity being directed towards the border and the people who are coming across. And some of it is absolutely necessary, and there are definitely people that are coming across, gang members and just horrible, you know, possible terrorists. There's a lot of bad stuff that could be coming in. But
is, then not could have, be, is coming in.
I'm sorry, is.
Gang members, is human trafficking, sex slaves, lots of bad stuff. And we just don't know.
Yes, all that. All,
if I may all really, that. If I can right. just insert for just a second, please. Because I, with what you're saying, and I tell people this, I say, look, if you want to come in, part of the reason is to get away from those gangs, those cartels, those that drug trafficking, and so forth. Don't we have to have a wall up to keep it from following you?
Yeah, that's a pretty good point. I mean, there's not much that you can say. If you're trying to escape the country because of all of the illegality that's going on there, and you're crossing a border illegally to get into a country where there's less illegality, there's something wrong in that, something inconsistent in that logic. But
couldn't you do that really quick, JD? I'm sorry, but couldn't you do that with a simple ad, just showing, you could show a woman who is, she's walking down a dark street, you know, she sees some dangerous guys that are, and then they're following her, and she runs and just makes it to her home, gets in, and shuts the door behind her, and says, that's why you have a door behind you. Okay, because you wanted to get away from them, and you needed a door to put behind you so that they wouldn't follow you in. What good would be running into the home when there's no door? Okay, what good is it running away from those nations if there's no border? Let's have a legal way that you can come in called a doorway, that you can come in and shut it, and we can keep out those bad elements, including terrorists and, you know, all the like.
So when are we seeing that ad? I mean, I'm sure the Party of Choice will be putting it up, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Yeah, we have to sell a lot of bumper stickers. By the way, just so you know, we are going to be doing a follow-up ad to Freakin' Love Fracking. I've already written it. So that's
thepartyofchoice.com. Make sure everybody goes there. Buy your bumper stickers so we can fund this.
Exactly.
Just send us all your money.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, really, and I really, it's going to feel better. It's more warm to my heart if you neglect your children in this. Okay. Forget about their needs. Finance us.
Frack all the things.
Think of the lifestyle to which my wife wants to grow accustomed. Okay? Think what you can do. What you can do for your children. Think what you can do for Andy's wife.
See, this is heartless capitalism and greed and just all sorts of you have proven the left right, Andy, once again.
What? Corey says it's for the children that we do this.
Oh, well then, sure. All the money should be going to you.
Okay.
For the children.
All right.
I worry that, and I think that the people of America today are very addicted to the idea of fairness. I think that's an effective marketing message. However, I think the risk for us in really pushing the fairness angle on the immigration thing is that gets twisted into racism. Right. Because if we talk about how is it fair to the unemployed blacks in Chicago to allow unbridled or unlimited illegal immigration because the illegals are taking the jobs away, poor blacks in Chicago, doesn't that seem, that ends up getting twisted by the media and academia and entertainment that hate us into racist messages from the rich white people that are the conservatives?
No, I'm not afraid of that at all, because it's the same race card that they play, and it's being used in a much, much, much more productive way. And I don't think that they can do it, quite frankly. I don't think that it's that twistable. And when you're going to, say, people who have been waiting years and years to become naturalized citizens to the United States, if you go to them and you're getting their stories and you're figuring out how they feel about people who are line jumping, and that's really what that's nobody likes line jumpers. I go to a lot of concerts. Everyone hates the guy that jumps in line and gets in first. Universally, that guy is loathed and detested.
Which, by the way, Obama did at the barbecue restaurant in Austin. Just saying.
I didn't want to bring that up. I didn't want to bring that
up. It needed to be said. And but, I'll take the bullet on that.
but suffice it to say, nobody likes line jumpers, and that's what's going on here. So, you know.
Yes, but Janie, what if you can just have your children be line jumpers, and they can get into the concert and have a great life as a result? It's for the children, Janie. It's for the children. This is line jumping for children.
Here's the thing. When you're talking to people in Chicago, who are they talking about that they're worried for? Their children can't go play in the streets.
Right.
There's too much crime in the neighborhoods for their children to have a normal life, and they're not going to be swayed by that for the children argument, and they are not. Based on the reports and the interviews that we're seeing, their concern is not when are we going to get some Obama money. Their concern is where are the jobs. Their concern is where is the safety. They are ticked off at Rahm Emanuel, and they blame both him and the president for the conditions that are existing in Chicago, based on poor management of the city, you know, the corruption that's abounded, the sort of things that have happened that have taken opportunities away from their children. And so it becomes a fascinating thing of which children is it for? Because eventually, and this is a theory I've had a long time, eventually enough of these fractured constituencies that make up the left are going to break. They're not going to be able to hold long term in competition with each other, because eventually you will have, say, environmentalists pitted against unions. Eventually you will have the children of Black Chicago inner city folks pitted against illegal immigrant children. Eventually that coalition cannot hold. And the question is, in what way do those things happen? I'm personally not extremely comfortable with those models of, you know, class warfare inflicted on those demographics for that, you know, cynical reason. Well, but I recognize that it's happening.
I don't think that we have to respond to class warfare with class warfare. And I know you're not saying that. I'm just going
right
off in the direction here. But what we can do as conservatives is just talk money. And what I mean is this. Look, bottom line is this. You know, and this is the big problem is bumper stickers that tell them that they're Democrats because they want to take my money and they want welfare and so forth. The better way to go is to say, look, I know what you want. You want excellence for yourself and for your kids. I don't know if you or are you on welfare? I don't care. What I know is this. I know that you or your parents before you paid into that system, and that your goal is one day to be able to pay into that system with your success. I get that. But every dollar that goes to those programs has to come out of the free market that would employ you. Every dollar that goes to anything that is handed down by government must be come out of the free market that employs you. And guess what? That includes going to millions of illegals flooding across the border. All the money that must be paid to programs and systems, and Obama just asked for another $4 billion, that has to come out of, I don't care if you tax the rich, I don't care where you get it. It has to come out of the free market that would employ you. That's where the jobs went. You asked where the jobs went? That's where they're going. The money is coming out of the free market that creates them. Okay? I want you to have them. I want you to have, I don't blame them for wanting to come here. I love the reason for their choice. But their choice is taking away your choice. Because in paying for them, and paying for all these systems, and having emergency rooms and schools and everything get flooded and going under, your kids are losing great opportunity. You are losing opportunity. And I don't say this to pit you against them. I'm just talking money. Okay? You can't keep taking it out of the free market to provide for people who are coming here illegally. That's why we can only bring in so many. That's why you have a door on your house. You can only have so many people coming into it at once. Is that really uncaring to say that?
I don't think so, and I think they're going to have a hard time proving it.
Well, and considering there was about 200 or so people in an upstairs apartment in Katy that collapsed a couple of weeks ago, it was quite illustrative what happens when you let too many people in your house.
Was that a flop house? Or a stash house?
No. No, this was a celebration meeting or party, and everyone had, you know, joined into this one room and in an upstairs, I think it was an over garage apartment, and the whole thing fell.
Was it the actual room or was it like a deck?
No, I'm pretty sure it was, like a garage studio, that sort of thing. But it fell down. I'll find the story, but it fell down with everybody in it.
That was a good illustration of what happens when you crowd too many people in one place. The foundation can't hold because
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm done.
Oh, I was just going to say it's kind of ironic that Cloward and Piven seems to be backfiring pretty epically. You know, the idea is that you bring in so many people to collapse the welfare structure and to collapse all of these things. But instead of collapsing it, it seems like it's really just ticking off the people who are on welfare and who are in these communities and who, you know, don't want to have further competition for jobs that are already very scarce because of the, you know, regulations that are also, you know, a part of the whole scheme to make it really, really, really tough to be business people to have a life outside of government. It seems like the left has overstepped maybe like a little tiny bit in their grand scheme of things. It might just be some bad planning going on there. It's shocking. It's shocking that they would be having some issues with their bad planning. But
well, and I think that's the opportunity that we have to seize and capitalize on. And we have an opportunity right now, I think, to seize the lower middle class and the middle class that's afraid of falling into the lower middle class. That is our constituency because our policies support them and support turning them from being afraid of moving down the ladder to being excited to move up the ladder. And those are our people. If you look at even the statistics over the last 6 years, the growth in the super rich people has been Democrats. It's been very much top line growth in the Democrats have become very much the party of very, very wealthy people. And we have an opportunity to kind of do a flip-flop and become the party of the working class. We just have to not seize defeat from the jaws of victory, and we have to message it right. And that's why we have to be nice to and nice about people on welfare, because a lot of people who are potential GOP voters are scared that they're going to be on welfare.
Right. Or they are on welfare. I think there are plenty
right.
of potential Republican voters who are on welfare. You know, and by the way, we're seeing this incredible lashback in that community or in those communities against illegal immigration.
And we need to be there to seize that. I mean, that's our opportunity.
Why aren't we looking at what I always ask people is, you know, when illegal immigration comes up, I always, you know, after saying the usual, you know, hey, I love these people. I don't blame them for wanting to come. Yeah, you know, all that. I tell them, well, let me ask you this. Could you right now just take 5 new kids into your family? No tax break. No welfare, no food stamps, no help, because America doesn't get help. Okay, America as a nation's not getting any outside help. So you're America right now. Could you just take 5 more kids into your family and be okay and provide the same opportunities for the kids who are already there? Or would a lot of money be gone for helping those kids already there go to college and have the right kind of clothes to get that job and move forward and succeed? Could you do that? The answer is no, of course. Well, let me tell you something. What's happening as a result of this flood of people is emergency rooms. You're going under to where you can't even get into them, or schools actually closing down and so forth. I always I think one big thing that we forget to do is always, one thing people always relate to is having a family. Even if these are totally broken up families like the modern family, no mom, dad, whatever, they still get the idea of numbers in a house. Okay, could you just take in 5 right now without any outside help from the government and be and still provide the same opportunities for those who were there before? Nope.
Could you just take 2? Could you take 1? I mean, you know, this is something that I'm familiar with because I have, you know, I have family members who work in those communities and have for their entire lives been, you know, a lot of times one of the most stable adult relationships with kids in these communities. And, you know, I hear stories about great aunts and grandmas who are, you know, the people who are leading households because of, you know, all sorts of terrible different problems. And, you know, we could have a conversation about mandatory minimum sentencing, which there's a story that I would love to bring up later that just made me so infuriated. But, you know, there are issues that we can totally talk to this community about, that we can totally get in there and make it have a real impact. So, you know, it is absolutely clear that they are suffering right now, and there are a lot of reasons for that suffering, and increased immigration, illegal immigration, the situation that's going on currently is going to have a profound negative effect on them, and they know it. So,
I just wanted to bookmark here that the video that American Enterprise Institute put out, where Megan McArdle is talking about capitalism and poverty,
social capital versus financial capital. Absolutely,
exactly.
I was just thinking that same thing.
It's a beautiful explanation, and it really kind of got in my head and made me reevaluate relationships I've had over the past 20 years in different groups with different people because of the interconnectedness of the poor life in an urban setting versus the sort of independent and individual living in the suburbs and you know, more wealthy areas. It's very difficult for suburban types, I guess, to understand the different dynamic that a person might make a choice that looks really stupid from somebody on the outside, but it is absolutely essential to a person living in a community that's interconnected and dependent upon each other so much. I highly recommend that. We will put that in the links at the end of the video in the description so people can see that. It's 20 minutes worth your time to get an understanding of the different ways that capital operates in different communities. I didn't want to forget that.
And that's a video that I want to keep watching and really internalize it even more so, because it's the kind of thing, is the kind of understanding of who people are that will help us message to people more effectively. Because you can only message to someone effectively if you understand them and if you understand what motivates them. And to understand people that are living in a social capital economy rather than a financial capital economy, our messaging has to be different, and our expectations have to be different. I don't know what the answers are yet, but watching that video of Megan at the the Vision Talk series, the two videos I've seen from AEI were both just absolutely outstanding, really helping to understand things that we need to understand if we want to move forward and grow the conservative movement. Can't speak highly enough about that video.
The beautiful phrase that I thought, or the concept I thought, that came from the head of the AEI. Gosh, his name is killing me. I can't remember it right off the top of my head.
I'm picturing him, yeah.
Right, but one of the things that he said was that you have to be able to champion policies that help people who may never vote for you.
Mm-hmm.
We can be as schemey and as clever and as Karl Rove as we want and just pick up enough of each constituency that we need in order to win. But are you going to promote policies that help people that may not listen to you, that may not be paying attention to your argument at all? Are you going to fight for people who can do you no good? who can benefit you in no way. Are you that kind of person? That was so moving to me.
And we need to. I need to find the link to that. We'll have to put that in the YouTube as well. Both of those AEI videos.
Yeah, everything from that series is excellent, and it's amazing. I will say one thing that was funny to me was I saw a lot when the video got shared was that one of them, I think the one that Fisher was just referencing, has social justice. I think it's the Case for Conservative Social Justice is the name of the video.
Clickbait.
When you put social justice in anywhere, the reaction to it is, you know, there were a lot of noses that went up. There were a lot of people that were very, very upset to think that, oh my goodness, we should not have anything to do with social justice.
But let me tell you that the wife of the Harris County clerk is a good friend of mine and a dear Republican woman, just a sweet lady who is so concerned with not just winning and conservative politics, but people. Shared that, not only watched it, shared it off of my share and spread that around to her friends. It's reaching people that, you know, I wouldn't think to have shared it with or talked to about. And she's got a lot of contacts in town, and a lot of people who do great things, who are the conservative, compassionate people that we're talking about, but who might not have ever thought about it this way. So, you know, there may be some nose upturned in people, but there are some people with sincerely great hearts who want to take that message and absorb it and think about it and use that going forward. So I was very encouraged.
You know what? Now that you mention it, and going back to Stefan's article, there were far more likes than there were negative comments that I saw throughout the share process. I mean, on Free Radical Network shares alone, it was shared like, I don't know, something ridiculous, 36 times for an article. That's insane. But, you know, going through and actually looking at the conversations that it was creating, there were a lot of really, really great discussions going on and some really great defenses of going out there and not being jerks and actually trying to grow the base, grow the party, and get out there and talk to people in these communities. So I had a couple of favorite comments. Somebody, you know, was kind of saying that, oh, it'll never work. It'll never work. I've been in these communities. I know from my experience that it's not going to ever work. Somebody called that person an Eeyore on several times, and I thought that was pretty awesome. And another thing that really impressed me was Fishy and I and maybe a few other of you guys here are friends with a self-avowed socialist. He calls himself, and his first comment after reading the article was, "Damn you! You might actually win national races if you follow this article. If you continue to push this message, you might win some national races." I thought that was a fun, nice little bit of a morale boost I want to share with you guys. But yeah, Andy, are you trying to say something?
What, me?
Yeah, I thought that you turned your mic on.
I did. I was just gonna say, wow, I just love it when the left actually, for a millisecond, lets down their guard and lets us know what we should be doing. I think that's incredible. You know, we look at the poor, we look at them the wrong way. We never think about, like I said before, why are they there, and what are their dreams? What do they wish they could become? Why are they settling? They're settling for where they are because they don't believe what they wish they could become can happen. And what we need to do is tell them, look, it can happen because we believe in you. But we understand why you are there. We understand the fear.
I just want to endorse the idea of everyone having a few pet liberal, sane people around, people who can converse at least on a other than shouting level, because you do find some fascinating conversations about, you know, deep areas of agreement. If you're really thinking about it, we don't disagree with people who are honestly trying to seek solutions to problems that we all acknowledge exist. Our definition of what a solution looks like and how we get there is sometimes very different, but we can find those bits of agreement. And I would wager that our conversations with this particular person who made that comment have blown his mind on occasion and caused some cognitive dissonance within him. And so it's fascinating for that to happen because we're getting intel that we wouldn't otherwise have. We're outside of our bubble, talking to people more than just those who agree with us, and our ideas are being refined. Here we are in the refinery. Our ideas are being refined by the use of arguing and communicating them back and forth. So it's a win-win. Grab yourself a pet liberal and keep them around.
And we can share ours. If you're desperate for one, we could share ours, but... You know,
the key is rational ones. I mean, I think we all have pet liberals that follow us and comment on our stuff. But yes, it is finding the 1 out of 100 that says something other than her.
Rational is on a scale. I mean, it's kind of we won't say entirely rational, but you know,
because he is a liberal. But
yes, there we go. That's basically the point. So. Willing to engage in arguments that don't boil down to "you're stupid," "no, you're stupid."
Basically, so, willing to listen.
That reminds me that Reason just had a poll out not too long ago talking about millennials.
Oh boy!
And it was very fascinating. They were talking about the difference between what liberal means to us, that of a certain older generation, and what liberal means to a younger millennial type generation. And when millennials hear the word liberal, and when we're talking to millennials about liberals, they hear entirely social policy liberalism. But when you attempt to talk more about economic issues, they don't identify with that at all. They're far more libertarian and potentially even conservative when talking about economic issues and the freedom issues as well. So it was just very interesting that using the right language with the right group, and we've been talking about that all night, but how that even translates into millennials. When we talk about talking to any constituency, whether it's people on welfare or people that are new immigrants that have not come here legally or millennials, there's language differences that you won't pick up unless you talk to them and know those things. I thought that was fascinating.
It is, yeah. And we have to look past somebody's label of themselves or label of other people, because we're all using the words a little bit differently, and we have to accept that you don't have to call yourself a conservative to agree with me. You don't have to agree with me on anything more than about 51% of stuff, and really, if I'm talking about issue A, I just want you to agree with me on issue A. I don't care what you think about C, D, and E, because that's not what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
And as long as we can keep the conversation focused on whatever the issue is, we can generally reach a wider audience and reach more agreement with it.
A 50% friend is much better than a 100% enemy. It's simple math there. But another thing in that poll that I thought was really amazing was they said that millennials identified as socialists, like some ridiculously obscene percentage, and that same and even a further more ridiculous percentage didn't know what socialism actually meant, couldn't define socialism,
I don't know what it means, but I am one.
I am one, but I don't know what it means. No, but it's brilliant, and it's I would love Andy to talk about this, because this is a big part of what the left does by co-opting disparate pieces of stuff and saying, oh, yeah, no, sure, we're totally for that. Come on in. And here, this guy is totally for that. Everything that you stand for is cool. We're good. Let's just keep on going. Keep on walking.
Right. Well, they do it with Comedy Central. All they do is put out some ridiculous straw men, call them conservatives, and show why you should hate them. With socialism, all they do is brand socialism as the economics of the economics of group caring,
sharing and caring and community and kumbaya.
Yeah, and forget the fact that it's taking and redistributing, and then they
and killing millions of people. That's so inconvenient.
Well, you know, that only happens later. But you know, and then they look at capitalism, of course, as individualism, which is selfish. And we on the right fail miserably in countering that messaging because we don't come at it with their feelings. Look. Forget what their position is. Oh, they want government to help them. Oh, they don't want government. Forget all that. You know, what I want to know from you is this. Why do you care about the poor? I have a feeling it's the same reason I do. Oh, okay. So you want them to have help because you see them in need. You see them afraid. You want help to come to them. And if it means taking more from the wealthy and higher taxes, well, that's okay because the wealthy are disconnected and don't care about them. And so here's my question, though. If I take from – if you give charity to somebody, let's say you help somebody that you know, you help, you know, a friend, you know, a friend or a family member who's in a hard way and you help them, your heart grows for them. You hope things really work out for them. You help them on your – why? Because you chose to do it. If it is taken from you for their benefit, will you like them more or less? Will you care for them more or less? You'll care less. You'll be angry. So if we have this whole system of taking from the wealthy and replacing charity with government intervention, aren't we going to create a wealthy class that doesn't like the poor?
It's almost like it happened on purpose.
Right. So haven't you created the very thing you don't like? Look, you and I have already bonded. We already both want the poor to get the money. Okay. But haven't we created I too think the rich at times just don't care about the poor, which is easy to say since most of them are Democrats. Okay, most of the rich are Democrats anyway. But, you know, but the difference is your side, no offense, but that side created the problem. They made the rich bitter. If you take from one and give to another, the other will become dependent on the one, and the one will dislike and resent the other. Okay.
You know, go ahead.
You know, so don't we need to help the other in a way that does not create that situation? And don't we not want to help a political party that capitalizes on that situation? I would think so.
I keep coming back to this, you know, links that I've managed to read in the past week. I've probably got 10 already lined up for the detail in the video. But Jean-Pierre Miley from Google+ has a blog that he was writing on that he did a great article about something that he learned from an older pair who were evangelical Christians. And they were asking him as he was, helping them in his job, whether he had a church and this sort of thing. And he just was struck by the sort of need to evangelize in politics. And I've said it in different ways, but he really nailed the way he said it. The idea that churches, when they do mission work, they don't just throw people out into a particular place in the world and expect that result to be, effective. They train them. They go through training and they walk, think about the things that they should be prepared to answer, the things that they should be considering, and how to relate to people as well. Not just what answers you give, but to listen to the things that people are saying as you ask them questions. And it's exactly the thing the Party of Choice does. It's exactly the thing that good conservatives who've spent time converting people do. And I think we need to take that more of an attitude that we must really think about what we're saying. That's what we're doing on the refinery every week. How do we say things? How do we approach problems in a way that relates to other people and becomes so that conservatism is more of a mission? If you're excited about conservatism and liberty and freedom and all those things and having the right to make your own choices, you should be excited to sell it. You should be also eager to learn how.
Yeah. I mean, what can we take the step? Can we ask conservatives to take the step? Oh, the very first thing with liberals is basically tell them, I love the reason you're liberal. Okay? I love the reasons that you're liberal. No, I'm not liberal. No, I haven't come to that. I haven't come, you know, I haven't drawn that conclusion, but I love the reason you're liberal. And you can do that with liberals on so many issues. I love the reason you're liberal here. I love the reason you're liberal there. I love the reason you're liberal here and there and so forth. And before you know it, then they're very willing to listen to, well, why haven't you come to that conclusion? If you love the reason I'm that way, why haven't you come to that conclusion? Well, here's why, because here's why it won't work, okay? And I don't mean to say that harshly. I mean to say that as somebody who wants your life to be better and other people's too. The reason it won't work is ultimately your system depends on your choices taking away other people's choices. The only freedoms you get are at the expense of other people's freedoms. And I don't think you want that. I think you're better than that.
I will say that you know, you started off by saying, can't we just have Republicans or conservatives approach it like this? And the problem is that sometimes you don't get that. That's not what you get. Sometimes you get those Eeyores out there that don't think that it's worth it or that there's ever going to be a chance that you're going to ever talk sense to these millennial kids that are, you know, stupid and they don't know anything and they're jerks and they, you know, are socialists and they've been corrupted by schools and there's no way that you can ever convert them to do anything useful. They're just going to be, you know, a lost generation to conservatives, so you can't do anything. There's a lot of conservatives that are at that stage right now, and it sucks. It really does. And Fishy is right, you know, bringing up that piece. We don't really have that centralized, hey, this is how you get it done place. I mean, thankfully, you're going out there and party of choice. You, Andy and Corey are going out there, and you guys are, you know, blowing up in Colorado and are going out and training people to do just this. But we need some franchises opening up because there are not enough people who have gotten to that level yet that they understand, hey, we need to figure out how to evangelize correctly and not do this whatever ridiculousness that you know the RNC is pushing on a day-to-day basis.
I have one very important comment to the NSA as they're listening. JD just said that Corey and Andy are going around Colorado and they're blowing up. He meant that figuratively, not literally. They are, to my knowledge, not actually blowing things up. Just wanted to clarify.
Well, Corey does strap a lot of bombs on her.
Andy, shut up.
You just talked about... Oh, no, wait, I'm not...
They're just road flares, and she got it from Tommy.
I was about to take this to a really dark place, but I'm not going to.
You go to these group things, and she does it so well, it's becoming like a fashion trend. Now all the women are doing it.
Really good for getting people to come into your training.
It is. Or else.
I think Fishy and I are on the same wavelength, and
It's too hot, Andy. It's too hot for us to be laughing. Why would you do this? It's not, man. It's...
Okay, but to cycle back to what we were talking about, I think that I'm desperately trying to get back on track, desperately trying to get my mind out of the gutter. Okay, it didn't work. Sorry. I think part of what we have to do is realize, or what we should do, is realize that the people that we're talking to here on social media and that you guys are talking to in the meetings that you're having in MeetSpace out there, is that we're already talking to a higher level of engaged person. We are kind of, you know, we're preaching to the choir in effect, but it's train the trainer kind of stuff. We're talking to people who are already more politically interested and engaged and involved than the vast majority of the public. So our target isn't just to convert the people we're talking to, but to give the people that we're talking to the tools to convert the people that they talk to. Because the people that they talk to aren't on social media and aren't reading the news articles and aren't getting the messaging at all. I mean, I had a very, very sad comeuppance this week talking to a girl at my office. She's very politically interested, and she knows that me and my sister and brother-in-law are very politically interested. She's absolutely on our side. And yet she told me that because she doesn't have a lot of time to pay attention to social media or anything, she watches Fox News occasionally, but she asked me if I could possibly let her know when a primary is coming up, because she thinks it's very important to vote in the primaries, because she knows that that's where you convert and change the Republican Party. But talk about making me feel really like I failed badly. She didn't know when the primaries were this year, and she didn't vote. And all I had to do was send her an email. Hey, Jamie, did you vote today? Hey, Jamie, you want to come with me and go vote today? And I failed.
Hey, Leslie, you can't hit every single detail with every single person.
Like the one person that I work with at the office, I totally failed. I mean, wow, I'm batting zero on this. And that was really a kind of a comeuppance to me, to realize that even people that talk to you about politics, they don't know what they need to know, and we're making assumptions that they do because we're not necessarily seeing ourselves as the teachers and the preachers and the evangelists that we need to be.
Yeah, absolutely. On this subject, I don't know if it's okay. Like, can we read? Do you think we could just read full articles here? Because it's a two pager, but I think it's really a good one. But if you haven't done it already, you need to read Kurt Schlichter's most recent piece, Battle Cons and Wonk Cons. I'm not going to read it, but it kind of touches on this dynamic that we're struggling with here, where you have people that are out there that, you know, want to be involved and want to, you know, aggressively send out our message, and you know, somebody who thinks that they're doing a good thing by putting that bumper sticker on the back of the truck, say.
I'm sharing the message. I'm spreading the message. I'm doing things. I'm political. I'm out there. I'm telling people stuff. I'm resharing stories. We didn't train them well. It's our fault.
Yeah, and that's basically the premise of the article, is that it's trying to tamp down the impulses of the battle cons to tell the wonk cons, who I think are us. That's my reading of it, but. You read it?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good. Trying to tell the battle cons that they need, that we are necessary. We're not just rhinos to forget about. But you know, there is some level of training. There is some level of strategy that needs to be out there. And you know, hopefully we can fulfill our end of the bargain and go out there and help people get to a better better means of spreading conservatism out there.
At the end of the day, it's this simple. In order for all of the ideas that Wong Cons would like to have implemented, and the ways in which they would like to have implemented, you have got to win. And you have got to win with enough of a margin that you get to govern. And then when you get to govern, you get to implement all the things that we believe in. And until you have done that math, and that means battle cons on the front lines doing the things that it takes to win, and that means want cons on the front lines making the ideas that help the battle cons in their battles and also in the implementation process, it takes everybody. We can't pit each other against each other, whether internally or externally, because it's always going to come down to one thing, and that is math. It is an unsurmountable realism that you must have 50% plus one to win, but you must win in order to get anything that you want. And if you're not about getting the thing that you want, if you aren't looking that far down the road to get the thing that you want, I understand. I'm cool. If you're just about what you get to say and what you, you know, your freedom of expression, and that's as far as you're thinking, I'm okay with that. But don't then tell me that you are fighting to win, because it's not the same. You have to work all the pieces together and see what's going to get the math that gets you to win.
Yeah, I don't understand, you know, I always tell, because, you know, as you guys know, I'm Tea Party. I'm a Republicitarian. I'm intense and all that kind of stuff. But I always tell my ilk, guys, these people who you call rhinos, these people who you call, you know, the moderates and so forth, I got news for you. First of all, you do realize without them, you don't have enough numbers to win. In fact, you can't even come close. So why don't you look at them as a resource? Because if you don't have enough numbers to win without them, that can only be because you and me, our type, are not winning enough people to win elections. So wouldn't the people who are more moderate and more connected, you know, more toward the center, be able to tell us why people don't want to listen to what we have to say? Aren't they a great resource? Aren't they a great, and I mean this, because I'll talk to moderates and I'll ask them, okay, look, honestly, here's my point of view on this. You know, I believe that life begins at conception. I believe this. This is why I'm pro-life. Why won't they listen to this? You tell me. And I get incredible information. If I isolate myself off in the corner, I'll get a bunch of losses and I'll never know why.
Absolutely. And a lot of the case, just like you have people who call themselves libertarians and aren't actually libertarians, you know, you have that whole rhino thing going on there and all of that. And just like people get called rhino, there are a lot of people who get called rhinos that aren't rhinos even remotely when it comes to their views, but just because they want to, you know, win elections occasionally, feel like, oh, hey, we can sacrifice this issue maybe a little tiny bit here to win this election. Someplace else will, you know, do even more on that to win that election. You know, it's really tough to deal with that kind of bias, and it's something that comes up a lot, and something that is sadly, you know, perpetuated by a lot of large voices in the conservative movement, and I'm not going to name names, but
I would love to have people start with the assumption that they don't know all the details maybe around why someone differs with them, and that's a charge to go talk to them or to spend some time in that camp understanding. Yeah, there are people on the conservative side who have totally sold out what, you know, our principles are, but shouldn't we find out why? Is it just that we think some politicians have gotten a fat paycheck from somewhere? Is there something else going on? Is there, you know, if there might be status or something involved? I mean, sure, we can get very irritated about that sort of thing, but we should also check that the fault is not in ourselves in some of those cases. You know, I was always telling people I was to the right somewhere of Pat Buchanan for years, and it was probably true. That's sort of changed for me. But I don't know that anybody could get away really sincerely with calling me a rhino. And yet it has happened. And it has happened multiple times, so much so that on my Twitter profile, my background photo is of a rhino. Because I think it's funny. It's a meaningless word. And we've damaged our internal mechanism throwing things around like that instead of figuring out, okay, I'm going to oppose that guy on these issues, but here's where I need him, and I'm going to work with him here. Instead, we've just determined that people that don't feel 98% like we do are the enemy. And there's no way to win if that's your attitude. None.
I've noticed that we actually spend a lot of time talking about how one thing or another is not good, and we spend an awful lot of time criticizing. And if we could spend more time promoting the things that are good and filling the space with stuff that we're in favor of rather than filling the space with things that we're criticizing. I mean, I think that's a constant battle in all areas of life, that it's easier and more fun and fulfilling to criticize than to promote and support. But, you know, from the standpoint of us being, you know, evangelical, train-the-trainer kind of people, I think we have to do that even more so than we would expect other people to do, and just be happy, not happy positive, but be promoters of the good, so that that's what we are known for and that's what gets shared out, rather than so much criticizing. And I'm one of the perpetrators too. I don't find myself blameless at all in this, but I do try to remember that, yeah, it's okay to criticize this particular Republican media person or politician for doing something wrong, but how about we promote and say, this guy did the right thing, hooray, let's get more of that, rather than spending so much time focusing on the bad.
I agree with you. I think, too, that there's room for that. JD and I have been kicking around the idea of the good idea, bad idea contrast for a long time. I haven't figured out a way to do that visually, but if we can find, you know, two, say, politicians or leaders who are messaging two different messages that are essentially the same thing, but one of them is coming across better, I think we should promote that. In contrast, it'd be much easier to do than just whole cloth, you know, making up something. It's sort of difficult just to model good messaging, though. People will nod their head and smile and understand, but you do need to tell people what is wrong with errant messaging. I do believe that. That can't be the only
thing. Like that one post from a while back where it was, here's the image promoting the whatever that march in Washington was. And here's an example of really bad messaging and why it's bad messaging. And here's an example of making it better. And now you can see and compare and contrast. And a lot of people did look at that and go, oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. And you're right. You do have to have the example of, okay, this is advertising the exact same thing, but bad way, good way. And that's informative, educational, training, teaching kind of stuff.
Yeah. And something that I think would be effective. It's just a matter of getting it done and, you know, figuring out what clips to use. So that's always the fun part, finding all of the stuff and putting it together.
Yeah, finding some Republican who didn't manage to put a foot in the mouth.
Also, I'm not going to mention the voices that I was talking before, the major conservative voices, but this isn't a major conservative voice I'm talking about right now. Can we all agree that somebody needs to just tell Todd Akin to go away? Can somebody just please tell him to just go away?
I thought Didn't he go away? I haven't heard.
No, he wrote a book. He wrote a book, Andy. Yes, he wrote a book.
With and covers and everything? And
yes, with covers and everything. With words in it. I can't vouch that they make any sentences, but yes, there are words in it, and it's not pleasant. He's going out there, and I'm sure he's going to make money off of his book tour and media appearances, but he was on Megyn Kelly the other day, and she destroyed him, apparently. I didn't watch it because Todd Akin. But apparently he's not apologetic about his comments or whatever. I wasn't looking for an apology. I just want the guy to go away.
Oh, that's funny.
It's not funny. It's horrible.
It is funny.
Yay, he's capitalism.
He's not. Oh, that's great. He's not apologetic. I love helping Democrats win and cause and wreak more damage and harm and death. Death upon the country. Woohoo!
Can we maybe call Costco to get involved in this one?
Oh my goodness. Yes, that would be great.
We will actually join you in banning a book.
Because it's actually so much stupid.
Did I really say that on air? I'm sorry.
It's like...
It's horrible.
Terrible. Anyway. Yeah, sorry about that little tangent of Todd Akin, but we were close to the topic, and why?
You know, seriously, what I'd like to do, slightly off topic, going in Fishy's way, is I'd like to get some old film of the book burnings in Nazi Germany, and then superimpose in the background a Costco sign, like you're in front of one of their stores. I think that'd be awesome. On, you know you were thinking of it too.
No, I wasn't. I think that whole thing is absolutely ridiculous that people were so upset over Dinesh D'Souza's. Was it Dinesh D'Souza? Whoever's book.
Yes, it was Dinesh.
Who cares? Whatever. It's awesome.
I'm saying have fun with it. It's hilarious.
No, that's not how it's going to be taken.
They are.
It was heavily promoted by Dinesh and his people. I mean, I think they capitalized on the event quite well and quite effectively.
Well, I think it was terribly lame of Costco to do that. I mean, it was ridiculous. You know, it's and they are a very liberal company, and for them to say that they did it because of sales is ludicrous. I mean, unless you're gonna, you know, do the same with Hillary's, can we call it a book? I don't.
Well, the thing is that they're selling exactly the same amount of copies. One's banned and the other one's not, so...
Well, okay, let's look at it this way, really. How much more powerful is some of the messaging that could have come out of that by Hillary's book sales in a certain period of time, Dinesh D'Souza's book sales in a certain period of time, and then, you know, Costco holding a Hillary signing event, and Dinesh D'Souza's books being taken off the shelves. How easy would it be, perhaps, to have messaged around, well, now we get what Costco is about. You know, they're not interested in making money. They're interested in, you know, promoting ideology or whatever. And people would know that. And I had people who were very seriously disturbed that Costco did that, knowing they were a liberal company, but loving to shop there. Okay, but can, you know, pointing that out seemed to be a lot better than trying for, and but we're back to this subject again, the victim status in this one. I'm sorry, I don't feel like a person who's multi-million-dollar author and everything is going to play as a victim. And it's not censorship. It's a business decision that they decided to promote or not promote. I think they were stupid. Costco was. I think it was the most ridiculous decision they could have made, but I think that the reaction was probably somewhat unwise.
I think it was overblown. Yeah.
I'm picketing out front of them with signs that say "Justice for Dinesh."
They hate the brown man. They hate the brown man. It was racism. It could have been. I thought. Making wild, unfounded accusations just based on assumptions of prior history, we could have made the cronyism assumption that they kept Hillary Clinton's stuff because we assume that they had a big contract with Hillary to keep her books out there for however long and to host her autograph signings because it is an example of cronyism, tie the political donations and their expectations of favoritism with Hillary politically and all of that, whereas the regular guy, Dinesh D'Souza, who just has a book under regular rules, and his book under regular rules didn't sell the numbers. Their computer just said, pull this book, and they didn't know or have any exception written in there because he had a movie coming out. I mean, I think it's perfectly plausible that in their computer system they have it set that if a book sells below X number of copies, you pull it. And maybe Dinesh's book was right below that, and they didn't know that a movie was coming out the next week, so that they should hold it an extra week. It's possible. And it's also possible that Hillary had a contract that says, you're gonna stock my book for 8 weeks. I don't believe that there's somebody at Costco who looks at D'Souza's book is selling. We need to pull that because of politics. I don't buy that companies do that crap.
Leslie, I think what's really possible is that Costco had to hire hire on hundreds of extra janitorial members just to keep dusting off her books.
So it was an economic decision. You're saying that they kept, you know, creating jobs by keeping those books on the shelves.
I think that's what they did, and I think it was very important that they did that, and I think it was caring.
Hillary's book is 400.
Look, let me tell you as a former leftist, sorry to keep speaking out of my former leftist attitude, they knew exactly what they were doing. They knew that his movie was coming out. They knew it would boost sales. They didn't care, and they banned it. They did exactly what they did because they hate him and they hate the right. And the biggest, most damaging thing that has happened to them is not knowledge getting out that they did that with this book, but rather as a result of the story, a lot of Costco members came to learn that the Costco leadership are heavy donors to the Democratic Party. That's the damaging thing that hurt them.
I didn't know that before. I didn't know that Costco was a super liberal company. At this point, I assume that every very large company is very liberal because you kind of have to be to survive in this regulatory environment.
Except Sam's Club.
Well, and besides that, really, though, if you're a large company and some whippersnapper young startup comes up, you want the government to get between you and that little guy who's going to start digging into your business. So, that's a reasonable assumption.
Yeah.
Before we move on to anything else, I want to address P-Dog's comment in the chat about Todd Akin. He's right. I didn't see his interview with Megyn Kelly, and I haven't read his book, and I haven't seen anything really about it besides secondhand information about it. Just hearing that Megyn Kelly destroyed him. So I don't want to report anything erroneously, and you're absolutely right. If he said something different, then I apologize. But again, I don't understand why Akin is doing anything, rebooting his career, any of that. I just don't get it. He has, to me at least, committed the worst kind of political suicide that you don't come back from. So that's to me, you don't come back from this.
To bring it full circle, for me anyway, it's like we were talking about with the guy's bumper sticker at the beginning. What would the Democrats hope you put on your bumper? What would the Democrats hope Todd Akin would do? They would hope that he would try to sustain it like this. Look, and I don't know the interview, and maybe it went totally differently and all that. Let's just assume that it didn't and that he's trying to make a comeback and it's damaging to the right. I really don't know. I haven't looked into the story. But if that's the case, because that has been the case with the number of people who have fallen from grace on the right. The question of them is this. Who do you care more about, yourself or the right? Yourself or the country the right is trying to help save? I mean, is that fair?
We should all be asking that question.
Yep.
There are a lot of people that... media personalities and conservative talkers and stuff like that, that our side tends to look to as movement leaders. And I think that's a mistake that we make a lot, the hero worship of our media people. Because the media types are primarily promoting themselves. I mean, it's their business to promote themselves. They're using the conservative movement as a vehicle to it, and I'm not doubting their commitment to the cause, but their primary goal is to promote themselves. They are not out there primarily to grow the conservative movement. And I think we make a mistake sometimes when we assume that their first goal is promoting the conservative movement above themselves.
Yeah, I think we all need to be vigilant about that. It's one of the reasons that Free Radical Network was formed, is to find good content from other people that we may or may not know and promote it. And that's sort of how we met the Party of Choice. It's going to be almost a year next month that we encountered their stuff. And, oh, yes, great example, Kurt Schlichter, who is not yet a household name but ought to be among conservatives. And, you know, we share, obviously, Kurt recognizes that, too, between all of us here in this call and our networks, we share a lot of Kurt Schlichter's content, and he notices that. And
he is like a god to me, so he's like the exception.
And the thing is that promoting people who are helping the cause is far better a model and it working together to do that than one person setting themselves up in a franchise of one in order to, you know, benefit just themselves. That's a tricky line to walk in the conservative movement. You need to have a big enough voice so that you can have influence, but at the same time, you don't want to be doing anything damaging just in order to build that influence. It's hard to walk that line.
And if you if you don't worship the heroes, you don't get brokenhearted when the hero has an opinion that differs from you.
Exactly.
And you're like, oh, okay, well, I disagreed with that article. No big deal.
That's why conservatism is supposed to be about ideas and not personalities.
But good Lord, we end up being this cult of personality just like the left is.
I know.
and that's actually why I was holding up the dust cover to the to Conservative Insurgency, which I'm sure I got mumbled on that because I was holding the book cover in front of my face while I was speaking. Anyway, the reason why I brought
it
up is because...
Hold it still for a second so it can focus.
I'm sorry.
Do it again.
Is that better? Can you see
that? Would be Conservative Insurgency by Kurt Schlichter. You buy this book now.
Yeah,
Amazon.com.
We're not being paid for this. But it is, in fact,
but we would take money if he wanted to give
wealth.
It to us.
It is contributing to our future wealth as a country. The reason why I brought it up was because I've been reading it. I'm halfway through now, and it mentions First, let me give you a brief overview of what the book is. It's a history of the next 40 years in conservatism in America, in the United States of America. So it's being told from the perspective of somebody in 2041, and going back through how the country changed to being a very conservative country from where we are right now. It's an interesting concept. It's a novel. It's fiction, but. One of the things that is a common theme that continues throughout the book is the idea that it wasn't about the heroes. It wasn't about the one big name person. It wasn't about, you know, and he doesn't specifically go into who the you know, the guys in it to further their own popularity. You know, it doesn't go into that. But that it is a movement of individuals. It's a movement of families and of, you know, people trying to make the country a better place for their families. And it says that the path to success was not through these, you know, following mindlessly after a big name person, but by individuals trying to get involved on a local level, taking over their local Republican parties. It is a really, 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 really good read. And it's told in little... many bits from a bunch of different perspectives, a bunch of different characters telling their own personal stories of how they contributed to the effort, to the insurgency. And it's really, really good, and I hope that we can talk to him about it and some other things in the future. But check it out, Conservative Insurgency, and it totally fits in with what we were just talking about not getting into that cult of personality situation. And I killed the discussion right there, like a champ. Look at that.
No, honey, what you did is you left a good spot to edit, to cut the clip.
Yes, very good one.
You made a salient point, and it was so good, there was nothing we could add.
We're all bowled over with the brilliance, and we're over 2 hours now, so I think it's time that we end this week's meeting episode on that advertisement for Kurt Schlichter's book. What was that again? Conservative Insurgency by Kurt Schlichter, available at Amazon.com.
They gave me two dust covers. I don't know why, but they gave me two.
So you can start with the whole new wallpaper thing?
Yeah.
Put the spare one up behind you for next week's video.
Yes.
Yeah, but it clashes against the green.
No, it doesn't. That's trust true. Me.
Also, does it look pink?
Trust me. No, it looks great. It looks You're going to put it on that wall. You're going to put it on that wall, and it'll look fabulous. Okay. We'll work it out.
We'll try. We'll see what happens.
We're so. I'm happy to say that I'm a Kurt Schlichter fangirl, as well as Kevin Williamson.
Yes.
I have no one in my fangirlness over him.
Well, and that's a good point. You know, it'd be nice to take a moment just to talk about a few people that we do think do well. I mean, obviously, we've dragged the party of choice into things like this, and so we're pretty big fans. Kurt Schlichter's another one. Kevin Williamson's another one. Who else has got a few while we're here, just so we can throw out some great names of people to support?
Victor Davis Hanson posted his article to the Conservative Union today and got one or two plus ones. That kind of surprised me.
Wow.
Yeah, very true. His blog is set up to now auto-post into the Conservative Union, so that's pretty cool. And, yeah, he always is wonderful stuff to think about and learn so much. His stories about California are truly shocking. Truly shocking. Who are some of the other ones? I can't even think now.
Ace of Spades, when he's John, not having a bad day.
Ace of Spades, absolutely love him. John Hayward writes at Breitbart and at, John Hayward writes at Breitbart and some other place that I can't now think of.
I really like the National Review Online. They have their newsletters. The Jonah Goldberg files are always funny. And entertaining. I really like some of the things that he puts together. But he's not boring. He's funny and amusing, too.
Sorry to interrupt really quick, but I've seen him speak a couple. He is a hilarious speaker.
Yes.
So much brilliance comes out so fast, and he just uses words in such a great way. I mean, he's an artist with it. Same with Mark Stein.
Oh, he's the best.
Yeah.
I have a Thomas Sowell RSS feed, so anything post on any website.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yes. In fact, the first television interview I did since starting the Tea Party, I had Basic Economics from Thomas Sowell with me, and we took video of that. It was great.
Yes, the first TV interview that you did. The first one. Of the several ones, you know, including the one where you were on Glenn Beck's show. We glaze over that a little bit, but there are, I'm sorry?
Never mind. I just wonder.
There's no reason why. It was a good interview. It's just something that she never talks about, but whatever. Charles C.W. Cook.
Yeah, and he and yes, Fishy's going all. Oh my God, it's his accent. Yes,
it's just hot in this garage.
Sure. And what I like about both John Hayward and dang it, I keep forgetting. There are people, Brian Preston with PJ Tatler. Those guys both, they tend to look at things and they'll not just share the news, but they'll share the perspective on it. They'll help you see the manipulation that's going on behind the scenes. They'll help you look through the spin that's coming from the other side and learn how to read more critically and more effectively and to understand where you're being manipulated and to really kind of understand the substance behind and pull different things together. And I really appreciate the effort that they do on many stories like that.
And that makes me think of Tony Katz and Larry O'Connor, both of whom are very aggressive when confronting the left about things that they do, but they're so clever about it. If I'm going to fangirl, I'm going to fangirl all the way. Those two, I'm definitely a huge fangirl of as well.
Tony Katz, the best hair on the conservative side.
Yes!
and it's not even close, really. There's no... The runners-up aren't close.
Tony's hair is so iconic that if they did a silhouette of Tony, the way they have with, like, Stand with Rand, everyone would know who it was.
Well, sure. Yeah, but also the cigar would be there. So it would be the hair and the cigar. It's like, you can't get past that. It's
Tony has his own brony drawn for him. I'm just saying.
Oh, my God, really?
Yes.
Somebody bronified Tony Katz. Well, so we have brony somebody, cats out there.
That's...
I think somebody did the same thing for Kurt Schlichter. Kurt Schlichter, in fact, is a brony. We've been through this, but now we're entering.
I have the pictures.
Yes, I do too.
Okay, this took a very, very weird turn.
It's best to end the discussion now.
I'm now disillusioned. Kind of rethink this whole Kurt Schlichter hero worship thing. Sad for me. Oh, well.
For charity.
So macho, it doesn't even make a dent, honey.
And he did it for charity, too, I believe. So.
Okay, well, then that's fine. That's fine. Then. That's fine. Then. Okay.
Kurt Schlichter or hero worship. It for me, it gives me purpose and you know, try. I mean, really, my whole life has come together.
Good to have goals.
He's a heck of a writer. Quite honestly, the guy's just really good.
So who here, brilliant.
Has everybody read his recent that recent article that yes. JD referred, because it is good.
I read the first page, and I'm going to read the second page as soon as we're done here.
Do you like it, Ryan? I mean, he talks about the schism that we're always talking about in conservative.
Yeah, so far it's been really good.
Speaking of good writers, though, everyone should be checking out the three websites that go with The Refinery, because each one of them has really good writers. Ryan has put great stuff up. Leslie has put great stuff up. A whole bunch of people at Conservative Union have. Between Corey's recent piece, especially on arming yourself and kind of the craziness of an attack she saw on the street.
911, please call.
Right, 911, please hold. Can you believe that? And then, you know, Free Radical Network this past week, best week ever for us in terms of hits. It's something everyone should check out. We have some good writers amongst ourselves, and we ought to toot our own horns.
And the links are right below the chat window. They're on the Refinery page. I need to find a way to make those links a little bit more bold.
Not just that, but we also need to do the whole share, like, and subscribe thing. A little bit better.
I need to
put that at the end of the videos and figure it out with the Adobe Premiere and all that stuff. So.
And I need to work on the web page. So, yay, HTML, CSS, here I come! How exciting! Okay, that's going to end our show for the week. Show, meeting, chat, whatever this is. Join us next week, Tuesday, 8:30 Central. Other times in other time zones that I'm not at, so I don't really care about.
9:30 p.m. Eastern. Thank you very much.
Where New Jersey is, yes. 9:30 for you.
Is the superior time.
And 8:30 in Colorado, where Andy and Corey are not blowing things up. Literally, they are blowing things up figuratively.
Exactly.
Dear NSA,
please hear me now. That's an important thing to say. That's an important thing to say. Andy, come on, dude. You can't just leave this with, next week we'll say how the Western Conservative Summit went in the chat. You need to tell people that you're going to be at the Western Conservative Summit.
Oh, wait, what?
Well, people, we're going to be at the Western Conservative Summit.
Thank you.
When is that?
At the table, it's going to be fun. We always, each year we've been getting more and more mobbed. So it's, you know, we're pretty excited about
it. Where is it?
Here comes my wife.
Well, and if you're going to be at the summit, you can come and meet two of our new team members.
Yeah, two new speakers that we're going to be, that we're training up, and they're going to be speaking for us.
Where is it and when is it?
Where is it and when? Honey, you have
Hyatt
all the...
Hyatt Regency, downtown Denver.
Hyatt Regency, downtown Denver, Friday night through Sunday morning.
And that would be this coming Friday, so that would be Friday the 18th?
Yep, if you're out west anywhere... If you're in the area, stop by. It's a lot of fun, guys. It's a conservative Woodstock. It really is. And lots of stuff is sold there. And not everything is being smoked.
It's CPAC of the West, basically, right?
It is, and in a lot of ways it's preferable. But there's a lot of similarities, too. So
excellent. You guys will have to film and report on it next week.
Woohoo.
Give you enough time to recover from it, so we'll do that next week.
We'll be so drunk, you know.
I'm sure. Party!
Constant beer bashes. Oh, wait a minute. What was that, honey?
We're on vacation.
Oh, we're going to be on the road?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah, okay. I guess we'll be on the road that night, next Tuesday night. I'm sorry.
All right, well, then we'll catch you in 2 weeks, then.
We're going to Wisconsin because I am also... one of the myriads of owners of the Green Bay Packers, and I am going to their ownership meeting. It happens once a year.
Cool. Maybe you guys could join by phone for 5 minutes to tell us how the conference went.
Yeah, we can probably
do that.
That would be cool. Actually, I think we can call. I think from a Hangout you can call out. So if you give us a number, we can call you next week. I think that works. I don't know. Technical issues will work out next week.
This is beautiful.
This is going to end the broadcast of the refinery.
For real this time. We're not kidding.
For real, not
joking.
For real. Our website is conservativeunion.net/refinery, and that's where you can watch the YouTube video and all that other good stuff. Thank you. See you next week. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Night.